gauge systems in the classical formulation, in the canonical formulation, and we found that we have constraints. CI, and we are considering here first class constraints, which means that they satisfy a so-called constraint algebra. Typically, where these structure functions can be arbitrarily complicated, but preferable should not be kind of singular on the constraint hypersurface, otherwise it would be a bit an empty statement. And we discussed that physical interesting phase space point lie on the constraint hypersurface. Additionally, we had this concept of gauge equivalence. And this meant that gauge equivalence classes were given by orbits generated by the constraints. And so to know that you get really orbits, that you can integrate them, these vector fields, you actually need this, for instance, this property. And I think it's called Frobenius integrability condition or something like this for submanifolds. So now you want to quantize the system, and here there's basically two points, namely that in principle you only need to quantize the constraint hypersurface, but in addition you have these gauge equivalence things. And so there's a question, what do you do? And in particular, if you take your kinematical phase space, and so you quantize, which means, as you all know, quantization means to put heads over letters. So you have Q, you have phase space coordinate Q alpha and P alpha. Okay, and then you have Q hat alpha, P hat alpha. So you the point, of course, is that these are operators acting on a so-called kinematical Hilbert space, and that these operators should reproduce as good as possible. Where as good as possible, you have to define what is meant by that, the Poisson brackets between these basic variables. And we will discuss that in the moment at an example. But given that you quantize these things and you have this kinematical phase space, which includes all degrees of freedom, in particular it includes the gauge degrees of freedom, you basically have also quantized your gauge degrees of freedom, and that is a bit unphysical. In particular, if you want to somehow impose your constraints, in a certain sense, constraints, because they generate the gauge orbits, they're actually exactly conjugated to your gauge degrees of freedom. So if you quantize your constraint, if you impose your constraints on a state, you will do that at some point. Exactly, it means because of uncertainty relation that these states have maximal uncertainty in the conjugated variables. And so since these are the gauge degrees of freedom, you would have maximal fluctuations in the gauge degrees of freedom in this kinematical Hilbert space. Which you might be happy with, because it basically tells you that your physical states have kind of an equal distribution on the gauge orbits. And that's what we are actually going to impose. But we will see that this is what we are going to impose. And indeed, so we will get this property for these states. But in the end, we will see if you have these states, they might not be normalizable anymore. So you have to think about what to do. So this is at some point what we will do basically for gravity quantization of gauge systems. And so we'll first construct the kinematical phase space. And to see how it works and to maybe lighten the philosophical confusion about time and not time, we'll go through a very simple example, which, however, is very instructive. And that's the so-called parameterized particle. And so, of course, we will start with the classical theory. So it's not yet quantum, but we will go to the quantum theory in 5 to 10 minutes. And so what does it mean? You start actually with, you know, kind of just Newtonian mechanics. And for me, not to write too many indices, we just take 1 degree of freedom, but you can do it with any system. So I have a Lagrangian, which depends on Q and Q dot. And typically, your time variable is called T. And so you would vary this action and find your usual solution as functions of your time parameter. And if you want, you can, of course, get also some conjugated momentum as your time, as function of your time parameter. And so you can always bring such systems, actually arbitrary field theories, into a more complicated form, so that they are basically diffeomorphism invariant. It has a name, maybe it's Kretschmann, so there's a name to it. So you should be always a bit careful about symmetries, because in a sense, you can always kind of add symmetries if you want. And so in this case, what you do is that I want to add T as a variable, as a dynamical variable. And then I need a new time parameter to express my dynamics in. So you introduce a new configuration space. So that's given by now T and Q. And so you have a new, let's say, auxiliary parameter, evolution parameter. Let's call it an evolution parameter. Which I call S. And so given that you want to do this, you have to write an action, because an action, again, will tell us everything. And so you actually try to write an action, which basically will have the same value on the same kind of orbits. So what I mean here is that you have here, in principle, if you vary, you consider curves Q of T in this system. And here B should be this system. So what you do here is you consider curves Q of S and T of S. So So you have t, and here you have q, and here you get a curve, and so here. You have something which goes in 3D space. However, if you have q of s and t of s, you can already, you know, you see basically the general principle behind it. You can actually get to, you can solve for, I mean, you can hope that you can solve for s this relation. So you want to get s of t. And what you can hope to find is q of t. And so to find the action, what you actually do is you try to write an action which gives for these orbits, that means for these orbits, the same action as this action. And so in a sense, then you will be sure, and we will see that it really works, that you get the same physics in the end. And especially you will see as since by definition, if you manage to do that, you can basically arbitrarily reparameterize your S parameter. And so you see this is called a reparametrization, and it's very equivalent to a diffeomorphism just in the time coordinate. And this will, however, not change the relation between Q and T. So it's only, you know, something like an auxiliary parameter. You can redefine it, but it will not change the relation between Q and T. And so we will have this symmetry, and by definition, I defined the action to be this action on these orbits, so they won't change if I do this transformation. This action will not change if I do this transformation. And so to define this action, it's very simple again. I mean, I see. So we take Q, and then we have, you know, we take the same Lagrangian as here. And it should be the same function of Q and Q dot. So Q is Q, but Q dot is Q dot is dQ dt. So I need to express it as actually a function of my new derivative, of my new time derivative. And the new time is called S. I can express dq dt as dq ds divided by dt ds. So I take this Lagrangian, it's the same function. So let's call it LA. And I take q prime, t prime, where q prime is dq ds, and t prime is dq dt ds. Okay, and then there's one other subtlety. I have dt, and now I need to integrate over ds. However, you need to be careful if you integrate, there's an integration measure, and dt. It's not equal to yes, but it's kind of, it's dt divided by ds times ds. So we have t times t prime ds. And so this t prime is actually nothing else then the square root of g we write always in the case of gravity, or similar to this. Okay, so we basically will have this action. On And as I told you, it will be invariant under reparametrization, which you should check at some point for yourself, that if you change this parameter, you will get the same action or the same value for the action. So let's, I skip this index B and A and whatever. So let's consider this action. Q prime T prime ds. And so let's do our usual thing and do a canonical analysis of this action. And so you will see that the same will happen as for gravity, or almost the same. So this means if you do a canonical analysis, we need to find the momenta. And so we have two configuration variables, which means we have two momenta. So we have a momentum conjugated to the time variable. And that will be given by the variation of s with respect to t prime. And so what do we get? So we have one t prime here. So we get an L. And then we have t prime here inside our Lagrangian. And so we need the outer derivative, or whatever it's called, so the partial derivative of dl with respect to dq dot. And so this is to be understood with respect to the original Lagrangian, which was a function of q and q dot. And then we have this derivative of q prime divided by t prime. And that's where the minus sign comes from, apparently. And so we have q prime t prime squared. And then we should not forget this factor of t prime. And so we have something. Okay, I write it to you in some form which you might. And this is called this is called minus the Hamiltonian. And for some reason, I write it with a small h. So we indeed expect that we can solve. So I assume that L, otherwise, this original L is a completely regular system without any gauge symmetries. I mean, it's one variable anyway, only. So we can write this really as a function of our momentum conjugated to Q. And to and as a function of q. And so here, we need actually to express ds dq dot and dq prime. And so this is this. And so again, you would get this outer derivative, I mean, the derivative with respect to this entry. And then you have this factor here, 1 over t prime. But then you multiply with t prime. So you just get the usual definition of pq as dl dq dot, as you are used to. And apparently, I really use the standard Lagrangian to make it even more explicit. So L is q dot times m. Q dot square minus a potential. And so what do you see? So these are the equations which defining the momenta, which usually relate the momenta to the velocities. And so we have one equation which indeed gives us pq as a function of the velocities. And finally, it's a ratio of two velocities. So you already can guess. I mean, this just comes from reparametrization invariants if you rescale these two velocities. And so here we see something which is that it involves only the phase space variables, but there's no velocity. And so we call this indeed a constraint. So we have one constraint, which is Pt plus HPq. And this has to be zero. And this just involves it's a function of our extended phase space, which comes now as Q T P T P Q. And so you see explicitly that the thing conjugated to the time variable is really the energy or the Hamiltonian modulo minus sign. So here you have an explicit example for this. And in principle, we will get an operator conjugated to the time, on at least on the conjugated, on the extended Hilbert space or kinematical Hilbert space. So sometimes this is called an extended phase space. And actually, this entire formalism you can nicely use if you have a time-dependent Hamiltonian, if you want to. And then you can avoid all these extra time derivatives you write because you have this extra variable t and can take care of this extra variable. Okay. So we have this constraint, and I made so many claims about this is a totally constrained system for gravity if you have diffeomorphic symmetry, and in this case we have diffeomorphic symmetry. And so indeed, let's check what the Hamiltonian is. And this time, we do it actually via Legendre transformation. So we write the usual PQ dot terms where the dots are now primes minus our Lagrangian density. And our Lagrangian density comes with a T prime also multiplied. So it's really this Lagrangian density. And so for some reason, this is T prime multiplied by this H. And so indeed, we see that from here. So here we have L minus PQ dot is equal to minus H. And so these are these two terms multiplied with T prime. And this is PT T multiplied with T prime. So you see that again, the Hamiltonian is just a multiple of the constraint. And it's a multiple with something this is T prime. And so indeed, you can understand T prime as before as a gauge parameter. It's actually the only thing which changes, and it indeed, you know, which changes among all these variables, because if you rescale everything T prime and if you rescale all the velocities by some factor, then PQ will stay the same, PT will stay the same, q will stay the same. I mean, it's just velocities. And the only thing which changes here is t prime. But just that just means that you multiply the Hamiltonian with some factor. And that's consistent because if you multiply the Hamiltonian with some factor, you rescale the velocities because you make your system kind of faster with respect to this auxiliary time. And so this is a gauge parameter and just tells you how fast you go through with respect to this auxiliary time evolution parameter, auxiliary evolution parameter. And it's auxiliary. And typically, it's actually just called n, which stands for Laplace function. Okay. So well, here we have the same property as before, namely that this Hamiltonian, you know, so you can either see it as time evolution or as gauge transformation. And so a change of an arbitrary phase-space function is defined to be the Poisson bracket of f of h. And so you could, so typically that is the Poisson bracket of f times of f and c. And even if your system would, even if you would choose a Laplace parameter which depends on phase space, you would get an additional term here. Fn times c. However, this is a term proportional to c, and so it's not really relevant to the dynamics. And so again, you see basically that you can even choose phase space dependent gauge parameters. That usually doesn't really change anything. And so you have to you have to actually work in principle with these Dirac observables. The gauge invariant functions. And so now you could be again puzzled, as people were puzzled in the case of gravity. We need these Dirac observables, so it seems that we don't have any time evolution because things need to be basically constant under time evolution to really operate with them. So they satisfy that these are observables D which commute with the constraints. And so let's guess what these Dirac observables are, or let's guess at least two Dirac observables, because we kind of can guess that what we need in the end is to go back to our original phase space, which was two-dimensional. So we need for that two Dirac observables. And so I even specify more. To make our life easier, I specified that we consider a free particle. And you can figure it out for an arbitrary potential. And maybe you can guess at least one constant of motion for a free particle. constant of motion for the free particle? Okay, indeed. So let's, for some reason, I write it in a very funny form. So the momentum associated to Q will be constant. And so I write it as a tau parameter family of observables, which does not depend on tau. But I do that because of a certain reason. To tell you that you can always, you know, in this case, you can always define so-called relational observables. Whatever. Complete, so they have 10 names, complete observables. And they use the trick that you have extended your phase space. So now you have actually more phase space variables to express your stuff in. And so I think as a mutation I use here, these things are really constant, as we will see, constants of motion, but they tell you the value of the phase space function f at that point in your orbit. Get a call from my mother. at that point in your orbit, where your chosen time t, and in this time is equal to tau. So it's a lengthy thing, but if you see this for the thing. For this thing, so what is q at the point where t is equal to tau? And so this will be given by this function. And so indeed, if t is equal to tau, then this thing vanishes and you get q. And what I've written here is actually the solution of the equation of motion, because the equation of motion tells you for q, if you solve the equation of motion, it should be q prime is equal to npq. We haven't done anything wrong. So that tells you that these things are given by Q of S. It's given by Q S at the point of zero plus N PQ. I guess I forgot some M factor. Times S. And so here you see that I have the solution, and I basically find again the solution, just that S is now tau minus t. And no, it's basically the time, the difference in phase space from the point where t is equal to tau. And you have to get used to it. I mean, it needs 5 minutes to think about it. it's really a bit T, Q. And so it's really that actually your gauge orbit in this case looks quite straight. And so this phase space function f q is really, if you're at this point, it means that, you know, you are at this point, and imagine that you have to, so you construct this phase space function in the following way. You go to the there are too many q's and t's around. So this is now the phase space point, and so given a phase space point, you draw your gauge orbit through this point, and along this gauge orbit, you find the point where t is equal to tau, and then you figure out what is the value at q at this point. So this is actually f of q. And so by construction, if you actually ask this for this phase space point, you go again to the same value here of t equal to tau, and you associate to it the same value. And so you do it for every point, and you see that you get something which is constant along this gauge orbit. And that's all what happens. So some people call it a prediction, because on an arbitrary gauge orbit, it tells you what will be the value of q if t is actually equal to tau. But this phase space function is defined for all values of t. And you can really calculate that this is a post-Dirac observable if you don't believe this graphical argument. So our constraint is something like pt plus, I guess, and so here we get only this term with this term. TPT gives me this minus PQN. And then I have only this term with this term. And the two cancels, and Q and P squared gives a plus, actually. And so I have PQ divided by m, so I indeed get 0. Yeah?
So it appears here that to construct this observable, we have to solve the equations of motion.
Yeah.
Is that always the case?
It's the case for gravity. It's always the case if you have time translation, so this is a slight disadvantage. But we will. We will see later how to deal with it. So that's the point, actually, because if you have this thing that you have diffeomorphisms as your symmetries, it basically means what you in the end have to quantize is a space of solutions. You know, what is a space of solutions? We have to understand the solutions, in a sense. but nevertheless, you know, so you can. So indeed, it's a bit messy, because people first tell you have to do Dirac quantization, and then it turns out you have to solve the equations of motion. And indeed, there's, in principle, you can always do that with these Poisson brackets and with these complete observables and perturbatively if you want. But we will see later that in order to do that, you can actually use in the quantum theory kind of path integral approach. And this will be a more constructive way to get all the information you need. But to derive that, to get to there, we need to go through these things. But that indeed is one of the difficulties, and that's the reason why for gravity, we don't know many Dirac observables. For this, you would have to solve the equation of motion. But you can define abstractly like these objects, because you can always write down some silly combination of symbols like this, and you can deduce some properties of these objects, actually, and base at least discuss abstractly some properties of these things. Okay, but this is, yeah, so indeed, there, Dirac observables means that you have to solve the equation of motion, and this comes from this saying that these are actually predictions about your space of solutions, which means that you need to predict something, which is always hard, apparently. And not only for the future, but also for the past. But this is a general idea. And so in this case, we really have two Dirac observables, which are independent of each other. And so you have this FPQ, which is a bit simple and doesn't depend on tau. So this will be PQ. And you have Q, and this is the thing above here, Q plus PQ M. So this is again two-dimensional, and in fact, you could now go to the reduced phase space and find your original system again. And we will also find that this is, in the end, the reason that even going through this Dirac quantization for the parameterized particle, you find an equivalence to the usual Schrödinger quantization of the particle. And as an exercise, you know, so the full point is that we could do that here for the parameterized particle because it's an extremely simple system. And we found a time variable, which is nice, which we expect always goes forward. But in fact, we don't really have such a variable for gravity. And indeed, there's already a simple system, simple example, where it takes us time q, and you can construct the corresponding observables. And there's already a simple reason why, for instance, you cannot really quantize completely the associated observable. And that leads to, in gravity, you have lots of analogous problems, and you can interpret that as a problem in localizing space-time points in gravity. So here the point is take us time q. The problem will be that you have the momentum appearing as a square in your Hamiltonian or in your constraint. And you have to take square roots and so on, or divide by some other things. That will be a main difficulty also in gravity. Okay, in the last quarter, maybe I managed to say something about quantization, because then we can go on in the next lecture with actual gravity. And so now, you know, let's quantize the parameterized particle. And so what we do I mean, it's an exercise, so we will do lots of unnecessary things, and we will see in the end that, you know, we get again the standard quantization. So, but it's helpful to understand what happens in gravity. So first, we have to construct the so-called kinematical Hilbert space, and that means that again you find a representation of your basic variables, and it's not too hard to choose what your basic variables are. So these are your basic variables, and since you know the free particle or the quantum mechanics, so actually you decide to take our Hilbert space, the square integrable functions on R2, and then you decide to quantize T and PT in the same way as Q and PQ. So that means that Q hat F of X, say, do I call it F of X? Apparently, I call it F of Q. X as a multiplication operator. PQ. X. The point is that Q, the wave functions, now come as functions of two variables, Q and T. And so these are not, so T is not a parameter here, but it's really something which, you know, is in your Hilbert space. We will see that in a moment. After writing these things, we will consider the kinematical inner product. So sine minus h bar. So this x as a derivative, so it's all standard quantization. So you basically quantize as you would quantize something with q1 and q2. Just that Q2 or Q1 is called T. And so I shouted Hilbert space. And so indeed, an important point, or one of the most important points of about Hilbert space, is the inner product. And if I tell you L2 R2, that indeed means that you define the inner product of two wave functions. Apparently, I take the mathematician's definition. As phi 1 bar times phi 2. And here you do something which follows from R2, but which you might not be used to. You integrate over Q and over T. And so you have these operators. And in principle, it's again just something where you would have a two-dimensional configuration space. So if you want to be more precise, you can go and really define them as self-adjoint operators and so on the Hilbert space. And so to have that, you actually need really to define this inner product. Otherwise, it wouldn't be these operators would not be self-adjoint and so on. And so now let's go to the next step. And that is, as I mentioned, you have to impose the constraint. And so what is the constraint? C is PQ square 2m. If you assume the free particle, plus plus pt. And maybe if you assume also potentials, then there's a plus vq plus pt. Is it a plus? I have a bit too early. So we write our quantum constraint, C hat. Very intelligently with lots of hats over it. And so let's see what it means to require C hat psi equal to 0. And so let's write pt. Forgot a minus sign here. Let's write minus pt on the left-hand side. And let's write the rest of it on the right-hand side. And so we see that our constraint equation reminds you of Erwin's, Schrödinger's, the Schrödinger equation. And so, indeed, we again see that to solve the constraint, you know, you need to solve the dynamics. And so, indeed, it's also the case for gravity that to solve the constraint equation and to find your physical states, that means that you have to solve the dynamics. So it's not that there's no dynamics, it's that actually to find actually the thing which are called states, you have to solve the dynamics. So that imposes the dynamics in a sense. And it shouldn't be so surprising, so we added t. And indeed, you know, the wave functions which are sensible are the ones which have some prescribed dependence as functions of t, as functions of fq and t. And so in gravity, the analogous equation is called the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. And again, the point will be that it will not linear in a time derivative or something. But you will have only quadratic things, which might remind you of a Klein-Gordon equation. And it's harder to select a given time. Okay. So this already tells you, I mean, you can do lots of more abstract nonsense to construct a map between standard quantization and this extended quantization. But this already tells you that you regain, again, all the standard notions. And if you quantize these operators, these will be, in fact, Heisenberg operators. So in a sense, this extended phase space quantization gives you a kind of Heisenberg quantization, Heisenberg picture. But we need to discuss one further point in the last minutes. And that's assuming you can solve these equations. you still would like to have an inner product which would also be valid for these solutions, because you want to express all kinds of expectation values in this inner product. However, what do we know for time evolution for the Schrödinger equation? It's unitary. So indeed, solving means that you could, in principle, construct FQ of t as a unitary operator. I mean, let's, okay, it's the exponential of minus I h bar, but let's, minus the exponential of the Hamiltonian, but let's write it as just the unitary operator t0 fq0, and this would really be your initial values. So now if you check, you know, your inner product between two physical wave phase space functions, FQT so assume that these solve the equation of motion or the Schrödinger equation, so which means that you can write that as is it you dagger here, I hope. T1 QT Q0. And here you have a T0. Let's write it in this way. U T0 F2 Q0. DQ DT. And so these being unitary, you can bring this operator to the other side, and Q dagger is Q minus 1. So these things will actually cancel. And so what you are left is an integrand which does not depend on Q. And you are supposed to integrate that over dq and dt, but then you integrate a constant over dt, and so you will find infinity. And this is also something very typical, that solutions to your constraint equation, if the constraint has an absolutely continuous spectrum, that is, will be basically have infinite norm, which just means that the eigenvalues to your eigenfunctions to your constraint, if the spectrum is not a point spectrum, will be non-normalizable, which you might have heard to occur. For instance, it's the same as for the delta function. And indeed, this is kind of a generalized delta function, these solutions. Okay, so we have this, we will get infinity here because we basically integrate the standard inner product over dt, and the standard inner product does not depend over t. However, here there's a simple solution to this problem. Which is that we define the physical inner product by just dropping the integration over t, because that's exactly what is annoying us there. And because we know that we get this unitary evolution with respect to the standard inner product, we know that this definition is consistent. And so this is one of these difficulties usually. So it does not depend on the choice of t. And since we know it's from standard quantization, we also know that it's extremely nice in a product being positive, what it always should be, and leads really to a Hilbert space. And so here you basically get back your standard Hilbert space for one particle degree of freedom. I'm in danger to be being erased, so let's stop. So in this case, you really see that, you know, we introduce the parametrization and we're puzzled and time was not there anymore, but only this auxiliary variable. And then we made all this exercise and imposed the constraint by imposing these wave functions and found standard quantization. So the message to get back here is that the entire procedure is called Dirac quantization, and it consists of imposing the constraints, and in the end, you have to find some inner product on the space of solutions. Okay, and tomorrow I will say 5 minutes something more about this constraint quantization, and then we will go over to quantum geometry and actually quantum gravity. Yeah.
What happens if my Hamiltonian is not totally constrained? Should I have like Schrödinger-like evolution, but also another evolution equation?
You will have constraint equations, right, which are not really Schrödinger. I mean, you know, they will not include the time parameter typically.
Right.
And then you have your usual Hamiltonian. So electrodynamics is one example. There you have a Hamiltonian, which is B squared plus E squared.
Yeah,
And you have a Gauss constraint, which is divergence of E is vanishes.
So here you recovered kind of Schrödinger's equation because you're doing this trick of making your action loop.
Yeah. So it's really if you have this time translations as a gauge parameter, you will as a gauge transformation, you will find that.
Okay.
Thank you. And David is supposed to have a script until this lecture.